First of all, when did you decide you wanted to become a broadcaster? How old were you and what made you decide you wanted to become a broadcaster?
Well, I thought about it long ago. Probably the time I was 8 or 9 years old, I used to listen to Cleveland Indian games on the radio all summer long. Every night I'd go to sleep in my bedroom with the Indians game on the radio. And I thought about that be something fun, but never really got serious about it until my senior year of high school. After finishing up my basketball season that year, I came to the conclusion that I'd played my last game. I wasn't going to make it in basketball or football or baseball as a professional, which had been my primary concern. So at that point, I began to focus in on wanting to actually major in broadcasting in school and specifically do sportscasting in University of Miami with that goal in mind and took the classes necessary and got the experience necessary to make it in sportscasting.
Okay, so can you recap some of the jobs you had in college and in the first part of your career?
Well, in college, I played the year of freshman baseball at the University of Miami and broke my shoulder making a catch in center field, and at that point knew it was done. I had a weak arm anyway, and then with the broken shoulder and the rehab time, I knew it was going to take a long while. So I went to the coach, who's still prominent in college baseball circles, Ron Frazier, who was the Olympic baseball coach last year. He was the head coach at the time, and I asked Coach Frazier if he would mind if we started broadcasting the Hurricanes baseball games on the student radio station WVUM, and he thought it was a terrific idea, long overdue, and so we did, and you know, they play an awful lot of games at the University of Miami, and we broadcast all of them, and you know, they didn't get beyond the outskirts of Coral Gables. It wasn't a very strong station, but the student population heard them, and the people right there around Coral Gables heard these games, and pro scouts who would come in to watch the local talent would sit close enough to me also so they could hear what I was saying about the local players, and I got some very nice feedback from professional baseball scouts who later on would mention my name to professional people. So it was a real good way for me to grease the skids for my climb into professional broadcasting, and also did some University of Miami football and basketball games, not nearly as many. Baseball was our primary focus there, and then when I got out of college right away, I looked for a job that I could get all kinds of experience in a small station, and I found that in Lima, Ohio, city of about 60,000. I did 2 shows a day on radio, 2 on television, and play-by-play of local high school and college games, small college on weekends, and just stayed tremendously busy for 2.5 years doing that before I then moved on to the University of Kentucky and started doing their basketball games, which was very, very fortunate for me at the age of 25 at the time to be broadcasting for the winningest college basketball program in the history of the game. It was a real lucky break.
How did you come upon your job at the Royals Network?
Well, I one day in 1979, I was kind of having a bad day at work at the CBS affiliate there in Lexington, Kentucky. Something had happened that had gotten my ire up a little bit. They were moving me from a private office into the main office with the main newsroom with all the other news people, and I didn't like it, and I was kind of angry just for the moment, and so I just that very day I sent out a tape and resume answering an ad in Broadcasting Magazine for a play-by-play man for the Kansas City Royals, who were moving from Channel 41 to Channel 4 here in Kansas City, and didn't hear anything back from them, Joey, for several months. In fact, I'd forgotten I'd even sent the tape and resume out. It wasn't something that was high on my list of priorities or anything, and I was very happy doing what I was doing in Kentucky. But just before Thanksgiving, I got a call back saying I was one of 6 people still being considered for the job, and would I fly out to Kansas City for an interview over Thanksgiving weekend? And I did, and luckily for me, I was able to get the job and stay in it for 13 seasons and have a lot of thrills.
Great. What was it like to see the Royals win it in 85 and actually get a ring from the championship team?
It was a tremendous thrill. That was such a great team, the personality of that team. They certainly weren't the best most talented team in baseball that year, but they kept finding ways to win, and they had strong pitching, which kept them in every game, and then they'd find a way to win it at the end. And that was exactly the way they went through the script in the playoff and World Series, too, losing the first two games in the playoffs and losing the first two games in the series and coming all the way back to win the World Championship and getting that World Series ring. You know, it has to rate as the number one thrill I've had in broadcasting, but I've had an awful lot of them. Went to two national championship games with the University of Kentucky. They lost in John Wooden's final game as the coach at UCLA. They lost to the UCLA Bruins in 1975 in the championship game of the Final Four. And then they beat Duke, a great Duke team, in St. Louis in 1978. So, you know, those count right up there, too, among the thrills I've had. And certainly describing Jordan Brett's Pine Tar home run, it's something that, you know, will probably never be repeated in baseball history. And I was a part of it in some small way. And so that was a big, big thrill.
That's great. Who are some of the great broadcasters you've worked with over the years?
Well, you know, I was fortunate early on in my career to do a basketball game with Billy Packer. It was before Billy had become quite as famous as he is now, but he was still a, kind of a legend in the southeastern part of the United States. And I got signed to do something called the World Invitational Basketball Tournament. Magic Johnson played on the U.S. team in this tournament before anybody started calling him Magic much. He was still Irvin Johnson then, and I went along with that. But the teams in that were the Soviet Union, Yugoslavia, Cuba, and the United States. And they played games in both Atlanta and Chapel Hill, North Carolina, a round-robin series of games. And I was fortunate enough to get the play-by-play assignment with Billy Packer doing the color. And that was a lot of fun. And, of course, you know, in baseball, I just been fortunate to be around so many great announcers and get to know them. People like Ernie Harwell in Detroit, who's a legend there, and he tends to take young broadcasters under his wing, and you know, if you're willing to listen, he'll sit and talk and give you his expertise for hours at a time. And people like him and Chuck Thompson in Baltimore, and Dick Enberg when he was doing Angels games. I've always been a big Dick Enberg fan, and I've gotten to know people like Bob Costas and you know, even though Bob is younger than I am, I still tend to learn from him because he's so enthusiastic and so knowledgeable and so well-rounded, obviously, that, you know, I think anybody could learn from Bob.
Right. So can you give me an overview of what happened last year with the move from Channel 4 to 62 and, you know, the move over to that network?
We knew heading into the season that the Royals' current contract as the TV with Channel 4 as the TV rights holder would expire at the end of that season. So we knew there was a possibility, and that wasn't the first time this had come up, Joey. You know, and play-by-play broadcasters tend not to work on long-term contracts. In fact, I know some great announcers who have renegotiated every year for 25, 30 years.
Yeah.
And I'd been fortunate to have a couple of longer-term contracts here, 2 or 3 years. But for the last several years I'd worked for the Royals and for Channel 4, I'd renegotiated my contract every year. So there was always some uncertainty to the position, but a little more so this year because we just weren't sure that that the parent company of Channel 4, Great American Broadcasting, was really that committed anymore to doing those games. I felt they were, and I kept getting that assurance from people in the front office, but there was still some uncertainty. Well, then their season starts and the Royals lose 16 of their first 17 games, fall hopelessly out of the race, and I honestly think that our fate was sealed right there after those first 17 games of the season, because the new general manager of Channel 4, Ed Piatt, kind of, I think right then and there, decided to jump off the bandwagon and look elsewhere for quality programming. I think that's a mistake because I think win or lose, there's still always so much conversation about the Royals. They're so much a part of the fabric of this community that it's a coup having them on your air whether they're winning or losing. But, you know, people in this town have become accustomed to winning. Now it's been so long since they've won that I think there's a new generation coming up who are hungering for a winning team and may not be as quick to become avid Royals fans if they don't become winners soon. But lo and behold, as that season wore on and the Royals got further and further behind, it became more and more apparent to me that Channel 4 was not going to make a really solid commitment to the Royals to continue to do those games and do them in the kind of way the Royals wanted. So they started looking for somebody else. They found an alternative in Channel 62 who could offer more games. Being an independent station, they weren't tied so much to network programming. They could offer more games. Although I was very proud of the work I had done for 13 years and had gotten very good feedback, I had a pretty good idea that if they did move to Channel 62, I wouldn't move with them, because the most visible change that a new station can make is in its broadcast team, per se. The people who are out there, their faces are on at the beginning of every game, and their voices are heard throughout. I worked with the winningest left-hander in Royals history, in Paul Splittorff, and unless George Brett had been available, it was fairly obvious to me that Splitt was going to be retained. And so that only left one person to be the odd man out, and I knew it was going to be me, and in truth it was. But I have no regrets whatsoever. I mean, you know, if I had it to do over again, you know, I would do it exactly the same way. I'd spend those 13 years just the way I spent them, and wouldn't do anything much different.
Great. What other kind of work are you doing now besides teaching?
Well, I'm going to do as much basketball as I can this winter. I plan on doing the television package for the UMKC Kangaroos. That's going to be a kick. I'd like to do some other freelance assignments in basketball. And I've been fortunate to get some good ones over the years, the Great Alaskan Shootout and the Maui Classic and the National Invitational Tournament. I've done some fairly impressive work in basketball in the wintertime. Would like to continue to do that. And if the opportunity came to get back into baseball, I would probably do that too. One of the things, though, Joey, that I've most enjoyed throughout my career is writing, especially documentary-type writing for television and televised sports. And if I could find just the right niche there where I could use that writing talent and the ability to narrate documentary, I think that's something I would definitely like to do, and maybe even more so than going back to something that I had done now. And you know, I don't particularly have any great ambition to be at the network level per se. Or once you reach that, so much of your time is not your own. You become a slave to somebody. You look at someone like Brent Musburger, for instance, who was just, or Kurt Gowdy in his prime, was just absolutely worn thin by all the demands on all the different events that they had to go to, and it just becomes something that can ruin your life if you're not very careful. And you know, I just celebrated my 25th anniversary, wedding anniversary, knock on wood, and things have gone very well in that department, and I want to continue to be a good husband and father to my kids, and so hopefully I'll be able to find just the right niche now for whatever talents I've developed in this business.
Great. How did you come across this teaching job here at UMKC?
Well, I always thought that there was a need for an introduction to sportscasting to give, you know, there are so many graduates coming out now basically with the same preparation and only so many jobs out there. I thought if I could specifically prepare some people for sportscasting per se, that would be a good idea. Now, I don't know, I've got 11 students in this class this semester, and you know, if three or four of them were to become successful professional sportscasters someday, I'd be thrilled. I'd feel that you know, we'd help them along the way in some small way. But if none of them do, if what everybody gets out of this class, Joey, is that it's much more difficult than anybody realizes, that it's so demanding that it caters to a very specific few who have all the necessary ingredients to put that package together and make it work. If that's what they get out of this class, then I think it's still successful in a way. I think it will still prepare them for something else, maybe in the broadcasting field.
Great. That's all I got for you.